I think I want you all to go home with me.
Here we go.
I want you to teach my home group how to treat a long-timer. My name is Arbutus O'Neill, and it is with the grace of God that I belong to the Elmont Family Groups. I am powerless over people, over places, and over things. And because of this program, I can make this admission without feeling guilty. I attended my first meeting in Amarillo, Texas, in 1948. I didn't want to go to that meeting. The only reason that I went to that meeting was because I had put myself under an obligation to a friend of mine whose husband was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the only reason I went to the meeting. And if you haven't picked up on the accent, I'm a Texan by marriage, but I'm a hillbilly. I grew up in the hills of North Carolina and married a Texan. Bill died in January of 1999, and I watched this boy lose everything that he had that he wanted to keep. My Bill I wasn't concerned with Bill's drinking when we were married because my father was an alcoholic. My father was a hallucinating drunk who saw creeping, crawling things. And Mother never could understand when her jaw was broken that Dad had simply meant to kill a centipede that was crawling in her hair. She couldn't understand that. I'm pretty sure I could not have either. But Bill was not a hallucinating drunk. Bill was a life of the party drunk. He crashed debutante's parties and taught them to put your little foot. And as I said, had he lived till April of 1999, we would have been married 60 years. And I don't know what we were doing when we were married 50 years, but something. And Bill said, let's don't worry with that gobbledygook. Let's wait for 60. But he didn't make it. I have difficulty still talking about Bill. He's been gone now for 5 years, but I live in the house that he grew up in, and he's still there. I just expect him to come out of the bathroom and to see who I'm talking to on the telephone. But my Bill is when I say to you, Mrs. O'Neill is not an alcoholic, but she knows about alcoholism, I've had an opportunity to watch the development of alcoholism in three generations, in my father, and in my husband, and in my only son. Luther was 15 years sober when he died at age 52. And I believed with all of my heart that because our children grew up in an AA environment, that it would protect them from alcoholism. I believed that with all my heart. And no one was more surprised than I was to have two of our children wind up in the program. As I said a moment ago, Luther was 15 years sober when he died. And Nancy has upward of 20 years in the program, but she doesn't like to talk about it. She's married to a retired master sergeant from the Air Force. I don't know what a master sergeant does, but apparently it's pretty important. He wears a lot of ribbons on his chest. But Nancy, as I say, doesn't like to talk about the years of sobriety she has. Peggy may have tasted table wine in her lifetime and didn't like it. And Teresa doesn't drink. She doesn't belong to AA, but she doesn't drink. She lived on the border for a number of years, and her husband was a retired border control and worked a lot at night. And Teresa was drinking too much. And she called me one time, and we talked about it. she said, Mother, we went over to El Paso Saturday night, and I promised myself I wouldn't get drunk, but I did. And I said, Ladybug, you're in trouble. If you break a promise to me, it won't matter. But when you start breaking promises to yourself, you're in bad trouble. And she quit drinking. As I say, she doesn't go to AA, but she doesn't drink. But I have kind of wandered in and out of this part of the country for the last 20-some years. I'm always glad to come home. The Texans don't accept me because they accept me because I married a Texan, but they don't show me the respect that I should have. But it's, and I'm trying awfully hard to stop saying we. I used to say we have 9 grandchildren, but there's no we's at our house anymore. I have 9 grandchildren because Bill's gone now. And as long as Bill was alive, our family had a purpose to live for. And now that he's gone, I have to make the decisions myself. And it's scary. You know, it's bad to have the responsibility of 3 generations of people when you don't really know what you're doing yourself. But that's my position at this particular point in time. And when I go home this Sunday afternoon, they'll expect me to give a report on what happened over here this weekend. And I'll make up a good story, of course. But I don't know what you want me to tell you. So if you think of something that you want to know about, ask me questions, and I'll make up a tale for you. But I'm awfully glad to be here, and I'm delighted that so many of you got out of bed to come down and hear a non-alcoholic talk about how to stay sober. But you're beautiful people, and I'm awfully glad to be here. I'm not hearing all of your questions, honey. Would you come up to the mic or something so I can hear you? Or here, she's bringing the mic to you.
You're the first person who's ever asked me to use a microphone, but, but I'm very loud. How did you learn to not try to fix your husband's alcoholism and to let him get sober on his own while you went about being a woman and a mother and a housewife? How did you learn to separate or detach with love from your husband, his disease?
I never did think of alcoholism as a disease. In my generation, you were just a sorry old drunk. You never did meet my Bill. He was a charmer. And if he'd told me to jump out the window, I'd have been out that window before he got his mouth closed. He didn't need a backup. Bill had 5 brothers and 5 sisters. He was one of 11 children. And his poor little mother died when she was 42 years old, and I've always wondered if it wasn't because she had so many babies. But Bill did not live with his siblings. Bill had an aunt that had no children. And Aunt May said that when Bill's mother died, it was the saddest funeral she ever went to in her life, because all of those, of course some of them were grown, all those people's trying to get their lives straightened out, and their mother was gone. and they couldn't find Bill. And Amy went looking for him and found him sitting out on the cellar door, and she said he wasn't crying. He just sitting out there. And she went over and put her arms around him and said, "Would you like to go home and be my little boy?" So he went to live with his Aunt May and Uncle Luther when he was age 9. They sent him through college, and he served a hitch in the Navy. And they didn't quite believe he was a Texan because he would admit the Pacific Ocean was larger than Texas. But my Bill was, as I said earlier, he was a great guy. He helped a lot of people. We came back to this part of the country a number of times, and Bill sobered up a lot of people. He helped to start the tape library in Australia, New Zealand, and I was privileged to go over there a couple of years ago as the guest of one of the men who had the tape library in Australia. The gentleman isn't taping this morning, but my Bill has about 1,500 reels of tapes in the tape library that's on our premises still. And my daughters and I have intentions of converting those reels to cassettes or properly to CDs, so that they won't take up so much room. But Bill left a big job for us to do. And when you were working with the microphone, I remembered what Bill used to say about these microphones. He said you have to be real careful with them because they're like a spittoon. If you miss, you make a horrible mess. But if there's no more questions, I guess we'll... here's the question.
Would you tell us about your relationship with Lois W. and when you worked with her?
I hope I'm never guilty of saying I was a close personal friend of Lois Wilson, because that is not true. But I was privileged to work with Lois for 6 years. 3 years when I was delegate from Texas, and 3 years when I was served on the Board of Trustees. Lois was a tiny little woman. She had to tiptoe to be 5 foot tall. And Bill was 6 foot two. So they were really Mutt and Jeff people. But these were two, this was a couple that adored each other. It was beautiful to be in the same room with that couple, because they were so fond of each other. Bill would bring her down to the conference room and make sure that she had a pitcher of water, and sometimes he'd bring her roses. But he looked after Lois before he did any AA business. Lois was his first obligation, and she looked up at that big old 6 foot two guy like he was God Almighty. But I was privileged, as I said, to work with her for 6 years. But she lived to be 97 years old. And helped a lot of people. Okay.
Edith, could you talk about your first conference as a delegate?
Say again?
Your first conference as an Al-Anon delegate, what was it like? You were at the very first Al-Anon conference?
Well, it was kind of a trial and error thing. If we did something and it worked, we'd do it again. And if we did something and it didn't work, we didn't do it again. And Texas is a pretty big piece of real estate, you might have noticed. And when I was elected delegate and went out to my World Service Conference, Texas... divided the area into two assembly areas, and it took two people to do the work that I've done, and I never let them forget it. But I went to New York, of course, as a delegate from West Texas. Now West Texas is a whole new ball of wax, and nobody knows anything about Texas except West Texas. But I went up there, as I said, as a delegate, and then that was in 1961, 62, and 63. And in 71, 72, and 73, I went back to the World Service Conference and served on the Board of Trustees. And what our aim was in those years, of course, was to get a district representative for every district in Texas. Bill wore out two automobiles driving me around to assembly meetings when I was delegate, because I don't drive an automobile. I'm terribly dyslexic, and the Texans are smart enough not to give me a driver's license. But this thing of belonging to the conference was very important, and I enjoyed it, but it was a little frightening too. Answer your question? Okay. Two behind me. Okay.
Yes, I was wondering what year Bill first went to, you went to his first AA meeting.
My Bill?
Yes.
In 19.
I also wanted to know if you went with him.
Say again?
Did you go with him to his AA meeting?
No, I don't have a drinking problem. I like it. Well, I went to meetings with Bill O'Neill and not Bill Wilson. I wasn't going to give up my bourbon because Bill had a drinking problem. Bill got sober when he was 40 years old. And he died when he was, he'd been sober 47 years. So our children never saw their dad drink, and I'm grateful for that. But that was 1961, 62, and 63 that I was delegate, and then 71, 72, and 73 I was on the board. Answer you? The gentleman had his hand up.
Oh, definitely. Some things about your daddy when you were growing up.
I don't think I quite understand your question. Are you asking me what my attitude was toward my dad's drinking? Well, bless your heart, honey. If I'd asked Bill O'Neill for the moon, he'd have got it for me. I didn't resent Bill's drinking or Dad's, and that at that point in time we didn't know that alcoholism was an illness. It never crossed our mind. They were just good old boys that were having fun on Saturday night. And nobody paid them much attention, and we certainly weren't angry with them. John Martin was the joy of my life. My dad was something else. Dad was a two-fisted construction man who worked hard, who played hard, and who drank hard. And I adored my father. Mother never could quite understand when her jaw was broken that Dad simply meant to kill a centipede that was crawling in her hair. She had a little problem with that. But I didn't have a problem with Dad's drinking. He used to come up. I went to school at Duke University, and he used to come up to school, and Dad was a very youthful-looking man when I was a freshman in college. Well, he was in his late 30s, And he used to come up to the dormitory on the weekend to take, to, so I could go home. And the girls in my dormitory would flirt with him because they thought he was my boyfriend. But.
I understand that you encourage people that you sponsor to read the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
I don't encourage them. I require them.
Can you tell us why?
The principles of this program, the philosophy of this program, is in it's in the first 140 pages of the Big Book. That's before you get to the personal stories. And I require the people that I sponsor to study those 140 pages in the Big Book or get themselves another sponsor. I don't have time to mess with losers. Well, they say that when you... no one has any more questions. You've covered your subject sufficient. Well, miss, here we go.
I don't know how I'm going to phrase this, but I am an alcoholic, married to an alcoholic, and I wonder how you wound up detaching enough not to take your husband's inventory, or did you? And if you did, how did you break that habit?
How did I have the break the habit of what?
Taking your husband's inventory, or did you ever have that habit?
No, I didn't. I didn't feel it was important for me to take Bill's. You see, I loved Bill, honey, drunk or sober, and our children never saw their father drink. Bill's job took him on the road, and I had a weekend husband. And my children never saw their dad go out in the kitchen and pour a drink. They saw him when he was hungover, but they never saw their dad take a drink. And we don't feel that drinking is a sin. I'm sorry, but I never did feel it was necessary for me to take Bill's inventory. He did a pretty good job doing that himself. And it's like I said earlier, Bill, if I wanted the moon, Bill would got it for me.
And, what did Al-Anon do for you? How did it help you?
It saved my life.
How?
Well, it gave me a philosophy to live by. And it gave me a multitude of people who were concerned with my welfare. If I get into difficulty here this weekend, I'll call my Al-Anon group. And then I'll call my family. You understand me? My Al-Anon backup saved my life. And my family, the attention they give me is just coincidental.
I wonder if you remember the people who made the 12-step call on me many years ago. Sam and Celia Harkin.
Oh, yes. Down at Texas City.
Yes.
You bet. Well, they worked with the Alateens, you remember.
Well,
how'd you get up here in God's country? Well,
and I'll
be 40
years sober in December.
Well, Those Texas gals play hard and drink hard. Here we go. Yes.
And how did your family recover from alcoholism?
The reason we call it a family illness is that an alcoholic cannot be isolated. He affects everybody in the community. And we call it a family illness because anyone who lives with alcoholism, when I talk, I say, Mrs. O'Neill is not an alcoholic, but she knows about alcoholism. It isn't my drinking that I'm referring to. It's the atmosphere that somebody else's drinking has created. And the whole family gets sick. And we have to get well just like the alcoholic does. And most of us use the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to put our lives back together again. Wouldn't you think that's a valid description of how the family illness affects us? I think so. That's a good question. Thank you. Yes?
I believe you talked about going to your first meeting and didn't want to go. What happened?
Well, apparently I went. The fact that I did go is apparent. No, that first meeting, I was not at all happy with my friends who insisted that I go to that meeting. But in retrospect, those people became the most important people in my life. As I said earlier, if I get into trouble in Atlanta, Georgia, I'll call my Al-Anon group. There's got to be an Al-Anon group somewhere in Atlanta. But I'll call my family. But my family understands this. I have three daughters. Our only son died when he was 52 years old, and I have three daughters. And my daughters understand that my first responsibility is to this fellowship. They understand that. And if I get into difficulty, as I said, I'll call an Al-Anon group, and then I'll call home. Answer your question? Thank you. I'll be so glad when you men shave your faces and cut your hair. I bet you don't get many kisses. Okay.
I went into that meeting on the break for recovering alcoholics. And I just picked up my 20-year chip, and my sponsor, who's been with me for 18 years, started Al-Anon and AA simultaneously because her husband never stopped drinking. And I did not know that I was learning the Al-Anon meaning, the Al-Anon philosophy, as I was getting sober. So just recently I asked her why she did that, and she said, most of Al-Anon is teaching us about relationships, and you did not know how to get along with yourself sober. So she taught me how to take care of the sober me while I was getting sober, and I use that in my sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
When my girls start to bring their families together, and now it's spilling over into, actually, they're sponsoring their children with the philosophy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are saving those teenagers from going into the booze.
Mm-hmm. It's been very rewarding. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Well, what's the problem?
I think there's a little lady back in the house.
I wanted to know, what literature did you use when you first went to Al-Anon? What was the literature like?
We used the two chapters in your big book, To Wise and To the Family Afterwards. Those chapters were written for the benefit of the families of alcoholics, and that's where we started. Okay?
When did the concept of the three C's come about in Al-Anon?
The concept of what, honey?
The three C's. Can't cure it.
Can't cure it and can't control it. What?
Didn't cause it.
Say again?
Cause.
Oh, we didn't cause it, we can't cure it?
Can't control it. About what year is that? Do you remember?
I don't know. My hair has been white ever since I was 28 years old, honey, but I'm not that old. Okay. I don't think I'm hearing everything you're saying. Say again. Well, you understand why, don't you? Every alcoholic affects at least five more people in the world. So you get a lot of people sick. Mm-hmm. Okay.
When you did a fourth step, did you use the format in the big book?
Yes, I did. And I required the people I sponsored to do the same thing.
In 1948, it was a couple years before Al-Anon started, were you going to Non-Alcoholics Anonymous or AA live
stream? What did it call back then? Say again? This is it was just called Families of Alcoholics. It didn't have the Al-Anon on it. Al-Anon was a suggestion, and that we took the first syllable of Alcoholics and the first syllable of Anonymous. That's how we get Al-Anon. That's how we got a name. Well, I existed a good long while, excuse me, without a sponsor. But my sponsor was Margaret Doherty. She was the editor of the Al-Anon Family Group Forum for 22 years. And she was, my first sponsor was a little West Texas gal who had lived in California for a large number of years. And she came back to Texas about the time that we got a group started in my home group. And a guy came over to my house one afternoon and suggested that we go to a meeting. And I had pneumonia every year for the first 8 years that I lived in Texas, always in February. And I'd been in bed for a couple of weeks, and I felt like as if someone up here said a junkyard dog. And guy came over to my house and suggested that I go to the hairdresser. She said, when I've been in bed a long time, I always feel better if I go get my hair done. So I'll keep care of your children and you go to the hairdresser. Thank you, dear. So that's what I did. I went to get my hair done, and when I came home, she said, it sure would be a shame to waste that hairdo. Let's go to a meeting. So that's how I got to my first meeting, and this little chairman of the meeting read a preamble that incorporated the Bill of Rights, the marriage ceremony, and the Boy Scout oath, and on and on and on. and Guy Neal's little five foot shoes hit that floor, and she said, "What in the hell do you think you're doing?" So to say she turned that group around was an understatement. But she was my first sponsor. And then later, Margaret Doherty was my sponsor. So I've been privileged to work with the spiritual giants in this program. Somebody else had their hand up back there. I don't think I understand your question. When Bill came into AA, did I do what? Okay. You don't know me very well. When I go into something, I take over. No, I don't ask questions or permission. I just take over the situation and do it my way. Okay.
I'd like for you to elaborate a little on why you suggest that you know, require that people be sponsored to use the format and they go to avoid that.
Well, it's the basic philosophy is the most important thing that we have, and the only place that you'll find it is in the Big Book. We developed the literature that we developed when Al-Anon started was a supplement to what we expected you to have studied in the Big Book. We didn't have any idea that you would throw the philosophy of AA in the trash can and use a supplement for your recovery. We didn't have any idea you would do that, but that's what you did. And so we had to work from that point on. But does that answer your question? Okay. Okay. I didn't quite understand what you said.
Talk about getting when you're asking me something like, hey, everybody have a district representative. Don't move about how the formation went
through. Well, the suggestion was made from the World Service Conference, of course, that we form districts and assemblies, and anything that those Yankees in New York,
Texas ignored completely. I'm sorry. I'm a Texan by marriage. I can get by with that. I can't hear you. Okay.
Could you give us a little more information on other things that you require of your sponsees? What would be the first few things that you would say that you would expect them to be doing?
Well, I expect the people that I sponsor to study the first 164 pages of the Big Book. But I sponsor a group of adults. I don't have to give them instructions. That's the joke.
Do you see many changes in Al-Anon today? Major changes?
Yes, I'm trying to say that I do, and it's not good. I think that the present group of Al-Anon people are getting away from the basics. I think that they need to get back and get back to working the principles. I think that we're glossing over a lot of things now that need to be attended to. And they don't give me an opportunity to critique their meetings, but sometimes I have the impulse to do so because they're getting away from the basics. Say again.
The steps. Can you share what your experience was with the steps? Talk about the four steps.
I don't know what you... What, that's better.
The 12 steps. Can you share your experience? How the 12 steps worked for you?
Well, I think they probably worked for me the same as they worked for other people, but when Margaret Darty was my sponsor, she put my nose down in those steps, and I had the distinct feeling that if I didn't take them, she wouldn't let me come up for air. And I wasn't reluctant to take them. I was going to take those steps and get an A-plus up in the corner, you know, like I always did on my papers. And then I was going to slap it down in front of that gray-eyed sponsor and say, I took these damn steps and they didn't work. And they did. Yeah, they did. And, but my first sponsor was quite a gal. No more questions? Here we go.
A good friend of Bob Jr. Would you tell us about that?
Well, Bob was he was a good friend of my only son, and as long as Luther was alive, Bob come down usually about once a month, and he and Luther do whatever men do when they go out Saturday night. But Bob was an extremely sensitive young man. I haven't seen Bob in several months, and it was shocked to death to hear that he had died. I didn't know that he had a problem. I don't know yet what his ailment was, whether it was a heart attack or what it was. But Bob was the only person that was alive in my lifetime that knew how this program started. See, he was a teenager and he drove his dad over to talk to Bill Wilson when he was a teenager. And the object of him driving his dad over to see this man from New York that knew about alcoholics was that Bob wanted the car to go on a date. And his daddy assured him that he wouldn't be over there but about 10 to 15 minutes. And 5 or 6 hours later, where they were still, you know, working out the details of what we have as a program. But Bob was a gentle man. I love Bob very much. And when he was my good right arm when I lost my son. And I was shocked to death to know that he had died. We'll never replace him. Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.